Seamus, The Case of the Mason Jar, Part 10, An Interview with the Police, is based on the book by John MacDonald, A Bullet for Cinderella.
I had hidden Pratt's body on Monday, but it seemed to be something that had happened a long time ago. I saw the suitcases when I opened my closet to get out my own clothes. I was curious about what she had packed. I felt guilty about opening them. Then I decided that I had earned the right to look. I put the larger one on the bed and tried the latches. It wasn't locked. It popped open. There were furs on top, silky and lustrous. She had packed neatly. Underneath the furs were suits, dresses, skirts, blouses. The bottom layer was underclothing, slips, panties with frothy lace and intricate embroidery, and shades from purest white through all the spectrum to black. The other suitcase was much the same. The clothing was fresh and fragrant with perfume. It was perfume that was not musky. It had a clean flower scent. I could understand how this was important to her. I remember her speaking of the charity gifts of clothing, of the dirt in which she had grown up. She would want clothing, a great deal of it, and all fresh and clean. I found the black leather box in the bottom of the second suitcase. I opened it up. Jewelry lay against a black velvet partition, bracelets, rings, clips. I could not tell if the white, green, and red stones were real. They were lustrous. They caught fire in the light, but I could not tell. I lifted the partition. There was money under it. Money in 50s and 100s, a sizable stack of bills. She had saved quite a nest egg. When I replaced the partition, the stones looked more real. After the suitcases were back in the closet, I wondered what her thinking had been when she had packed the money in there. Perhaps she assumed I wouldn't search the bags. I hadn't intended to. Maybe she thought that even if I did search them and did find the money, it would be safer with me than it would be in the apartment. She could have been right. It was safe with me. Even if I had been the sort of person to take it and leave, that sort of person would have waited for the chance of acquiring much more, a chance only Susie could provide. I found the buzzard woman cleaning one of the rooms. I paid her for another two nights in advance for myself and asked her to save the room next to mine for a friend who would check in on Thursday. I gave her one night rental on the second room. I found myself wondering if what Susie had proposed might be the best solution for me. It was tempting. She would make it easy to forget a lot of things. We would have no claims on each other and would be wedded only by the money and divorced when it was gone. I parked a half a block from the hardware store. I wanted to talk to Leon again. I wanted to see if I could steer the conversation toward Lizette and Mr. Horseman. I wanted to see if he would say anything that would make more sense out of the Pratt death. Susie seemed confident that no one else could find the money and is certain that Stuckey hadn't contacted her. So it began to appear less logical that Pratt's death had anything to do with the money. Then why had Pratt been killed? He could have gotten into some kind of argument with Stuckey. Pratt was at the lake on Saturday. I stayed drunk Saturday and Sunday. Stuckey could have killed him on Sunday. He could have loaded the body into his car and gone looking for some place to put it and spotted my car. The Florida plates would be easy to spot. But by putting the body in my car, he gained leverage. But maybe Stuckey was convinced that with the clue in his possession, with the name Pixie, he could accomplish as much or more than I could. He was a man of great confidence in himself. And not, I had begun to believe, entirely sane. If Pratt had contacted Stuckey, perhaps Leon could provide me with some meaningful clue as to why. But there was a sign on the door. The store was closed. The sign gave no additional information. It was crudely printed on paper, scotch taped to the inside of the door. Closed. It took me several minutes to find Leon's hotel. It was seedy-looking, depressing. It had once been painted yellow and white. I went into the lobby. The desk man watched me, his eyes bored, his heavy face slack, smoke curling up from the vape he held in his fingers. I want to see Leon Vincent.
Second floor, the stairs are over there. A girl just went up there to see him a minute ago. Go head on up. Room 203. She takes care of him when he gets in rough shape. Just now got there.
I guessed it was Irene. I didn't want to talk to Leon with her there. I went up the stairs slowly. When I got to the second floor, I saw Irene running down the gloomy hall toward me. I reached the top of the stairs just as she got there. Her eyes were wide and unfocused. I grabbed her and she fought against me. Irene! She focused on me, hesitated, and then came into my arms. She was trembling all over. She ground her forehead against my chin, rocking her head from side to side. After a few moments, she regained enough control to speak.
Is Leon in the room? On the bed?
Wait right here.
No! I have to call the police!
The door to room 203 was open. Leon lay across the bed, naked. There was a rifle on the floor. A towel was loosely wrapped around the muzzle. It was scorched where the slug had gone through it. I moved uneasily around to where I could see his head. The back of his head was smeared on the wall and dripping to the floor. The room stank with the smell of death. I backed through the door into the hall. I mopped my forehead. It was a hell of a thing for Irene to have seen. They could just as well tack a sign to this door, to this life. Closed. Closed for good. I stood there in the hall and heard the sirens. The desk clerk came lumbering down the hall and stared in. Some of the other residents came out of their rooms.
Good Christ!
My, oh my, oh my!
They got us all down into a room in police headquarters. Some of the faces were familiar. Prasad was not on top this time. He was taking orders from a Captain Wayne. Captain Wayne was a mild, sandy man who wanted everything cozy and neighborly. He had a wide face full of smile wrinkles and a soft buzzing voice and little blue eyes sunk back beyond the thick, crisp blonde curl of his eyebrows. Rather than individual questioning, Wayne made it a seminar. Prasad sat silently with a bleak look. There was a stenotype operator present. Captain Wayne apologized for inconveniencing anybody. He apologized several times. He shifted papers and cleared his throat and coughed.
As I finish with you, I'll tell you whether you can take off or not. Nothing particularly official about this. It's a sort of investigation. Get the facts in front of us.
I saw Prasad shift restlessly.
I got it right here on this paper that the body was discovered at 20 minutes after 10 this morning by Irene Hirsch. Now, Ms. Hirsch, what were you doing at White's Hotel?
Captain Wayne, Leon didn't have anybody to look after him. Every once in a while, I'd sort of help him get straightened out.
You used to date Floyd, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
What took you down there this morning?
There's a close sign on Leon's store. After I got home, I phoned White's Hotel. Mr. Payne was on the desk, and well, he told me Leon was drinking. Leon wouldn't answer the room phone, and I went to check on him. The door wasn't even locked. I opened it, and I saw him.
What were you planning to do?
Get him some coffee. Get him cleaned up. Give him a good talking to, I guess.
Miss Hirsch, you can stay or go. Now then, Hunter James, you came along right after Miss Hirsch. What were you doing there?
Irene started to leave and then sat back down. I wanted to talk to Leon. I saw that the store was closed, so I went to the hotel.
What did you want to talk about?
We had this man in last week, Captain. We thought he was another one of those people Mrs. Hossman keeps sending down here. This man claims he's writing a book about men who died in the line of duty. He's never written a book. He's unemployed. Has no local address.
Sadiq, you make everything sound so damn serious. Maybe this boy wants to write a book. Maybe he's trying.
I happen to doubt it, Captain.
What did you want to talk to Leon about, son?
I wanted more information about Floyd. I glanced at Irene. She was looking at me with contempt. She looked away.
What happened when you got there?
The desk clerk told me a girl had just gone up. I met Miss Hirsch when I got to the head of the stairs. She was too upset to talk.
I got a look in that room myself. Hardly blame her. Terrible looking sight. All right, son. You can go if you want to.
I'd prefer him to stay, if you don't mind, Captain.
All right, Sadeep. Stick around, Mr. James. Now, Jay, we'll get to you. The doc says he could fix the time of death about midnight last night. He may be able to get it a little closer, but he says that's a pretty good guess. Did you see Leon come in?
No, sir. There were a lot of people coming and going. That's why I brought Mr. Menez along with me.
I'm Meneses, Johan Cortez Meneses. Retired 11 years ago. I'm not what you call a drinking man, and I see Liam Vincent come in. I was behind him maybe half a block. I just happened to look at my watch because I was wondering what time I was getting in. Watch said 11:27.
Are you sure it was Leon?
As sure as I know my own name. Man alive, he was drunk, wagging his arms, staggering all over. If it wasn't for his friend, he'd never made it home.
Who was his friend?
Don't know him. Didn't get a look at him. Stiff in one leg, like a limp. He powered Leon right into the hotel. Time I came in, they were gone upstairs. The lobby was empty. I could hear some of the boys hooting, hollering, and carrying on the second floor. So I went up there. After a while, I went on down to bed. Got into my room right at midnight. Right then, I heard a funny noise, just when I was closing my door. It sounded a little like somebody dropped a book, or maybe tipped over a chair and thumped his head. I listened, and I didn't hear anything else, so I went right to bed. It turns out that must have been when Leon shot himself.
That would fit what the doctor says. Mr. Payne, could you find anybody else who heard anything?
No, sir.
You don't need anybody else. I've told you all you need to know, haven't I?
Thanks, Mr. Menezes. You can go along if you want to.
I'll stay and see what happens, thank you.
Captain Wayne studied the papers in front of him and then muttered to himself for a while. At last he looked up.
It's not up to me to make any decision. That'll be up to the inquest. It certainly looks to me like suicide. Sadeep, you look uneasy. What's on your mind?
Captain, I'm interested in the stiff-legged man, and the evidence doesn't sound like suicide. A towel was used as a crude silencer. The gun was new. The tag was still wired to the trigger guard. The prints on the side of the action were too clean. They were Leon's, of course. The prints on the inside doorknob were smeared. Suicides are usually naked and the clothes neatly folded. Leon's buttons had been ripped off his shirt. Maybe somebody undressed him in a hurry.
What do you mean, Sadeep?
Here's what I'm thinking. I think somebody met Leon after he headed for White's. I talked to the bartender. Leon was nearly helpless. He carried a key to the store. I think maybe somebody went to the store with him and took a rifle out of stock. I think he slid it down his pant leg. That gave him a stiff-legged walk. He took Leon up to his room, fed him more liquor. When Leon passed out, the unknown man undressed him, sat him on the edge of the bed, wrapped the muzzle, opened his mouth, put it between his teeth, and pulled the trigger. He put prints on the gun and bottle, smeared the knob, and left.
Sadeep, damn it. You always make things harder.
Strange things are going on. I got a missing persons report from the county sheriff's office today. A man named Arnold Pratt left his stuff in a cabin and didn't come back for it. A PI from Chicago. He'd been staying there a couple of weeks, down here on that horseman thing. Yesterday, a car was towed in on a parking violation. Blue sedan with Illinois plates registered to Pratt. So, Pratt disappears. Leon Vincent suicides. Pratt was looking into the disappearance of Mr. Horseman, who took off with Leon Vincent's wife. I want to know how it's connected. I'm suspicious Leon was murdered. Was it that Florida man over there who claims to be writing a book? Who was it? Why was it done?
Sadeep, I could never get it through my head why you take off so ugly on those men who came down to poke around. That poor horseman woman. If she wants to spend her money, why don't you let her? It's no skin off us.
We're the law and order here. I don't like amateur competition.
Sometimes those fellas can help, Sadiq.
I have yet to see the day.
What did those Chicago people say? Did you get in touch?
No.
Well, you phone them, Sadiq, and let them handle it with the agency. Those fellas may want to send somebody else down.
Why, for God's sake?
Why? To look for Pratt. He's missing, isn't he?
I managed to walk out beside Irene. She was cool, almost to the point of complete indifference. The day had begun to clear, and we stood in frail sunlight.
Don't you contact me again. I know that you were using me. You've been a big disappointment. I don't need another liar in my life.
It must be hard to be the only perfect person, surrounded by all the rest of us.
We're done.
I think you think you're made of gold, that's all. You make a lot of virtuous noise, and you condemn me without knowing the score.
You're a liar.
I was about to leave her there when a man came up to us. He was young, with a thin face and heavy horn-rimmed glasses.
Hello, Zachary. Zachary Keller? This is Hunter James. He was just leaving.
Irene, I just heard they're going to appoint me to straighten out Leon's estate. What there is left of it. Do you happen to know what happened to the household effects when he sold to Siler?
He sold everything, Zachary.
I don't know where the money went. I've been in touch with the bank. There's only 3 accounts open. The lumberyard and the store and his personal account, and damn little money in any of them. You're about the only one of his old friends who saw much of him, Irene. Where did it all go? He liquidated an awful lot of stuff in the past year. What the hell was he doing? Playing the market? Gambling? Women? Drugs?
He was drinking it up, I guess.
I know what Siler paid for the house. I know what he got when he sold the lease on Delaware Street. I know what he got for the big dump trucks and the cement trucks. If he didn't touch anything but a bottle of booze at the going rate means he'd have to drink more than a human can consume and live to go through that money.
Maybe it's in some other account, Zachary.
I doubt it. He had a huge tab at more than one bar. He was behind on the room at the hotel. Sid Forrester had a 60-day exclusive listing on the lumberyard and had an interested customer lined up. That was the only thing Leon had left that was making any money.
Maybe you can go over his accounts. You can find what he wrote checks for, Zachary.
That isn't going to work either. He wrote checks for cash and cashed them at the bank for various amounts ranging in the thousands.
He didn't seem worried about money.
He didn't seem worried about anything. He didn't seem to give a damn about anything. He almost seemed to be enjoying some big joke on himself.
And right at that moment, something became very clear to me. Something I should have seen before. I wondered why I'd been so dense. Once you saw things in the proper light, a lot of things fell in place.
Thank you for listening to Seamus. If you like this episode of Seamus, please leave a review and tell your friends. Seamus, The Case of the Mason Jar, Part 10, An Interview with the Police, is based on the book A Bullet for Cinderella by John MacDonald. Hunter James was played by Tom Hinton. Irene Hirsch was played by Marsha Taylor. Jay Payne was played by Nick Yamateo. Johan Meneses was played by Mike Rowe. Captain Wayne was played by Patrick Bran Carter. Sudeep Prasad was played by Gordon Adams. Zachary Keller was played by Nick Gordon. I'm Leslie Woodruff. This episode of Seamus was written by Max Rees and directed by Tom Hinton. Seamus is a New Meadows Media production. All rights reserved.